All right, so get this, right? A guy racks up this like $250,000 bill for salmon
Yeah.
and then tries to pull the whole who me card.
Oh, wow.
Like, wasn't me. Some other company did it, but get this, the company
Oh, no.
doesn't exist.
Oh, that's not good.
Talk about a fishy situation, right?
Yeah, definitely.
We're diving into Atlantic Salmon, ASV Curran, and let me tell you, this is a deep, deep dive
Yeah.
into some really murky waters when it comes to agency law.
Absolutely. This case is just like, it's not some obscure legal battle. You know what I mean? It
Yeah.
really like throws open the doors and shines a spotlight on transparency in business,
Yeah.
especially when you're dealing with
When you get
agents.
these middlemen, yeah.
Right? Like in this case, we have Norwegian salmon
Yeah, away
exporters
from Norway.
getting all tangled up with this businessman in
Oh.
Massachusetts.
Oh, wow.
And it all boils down to this one question: who's responsible for making sure everyone knows who they're really dealing with?
Yeah, it's all about like knowing who you're getting in bed with, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So what's the story with this Kix? Like, what are we talking about here?
Okay, so picture this:
Yeah.
shea companies, phantom signatures,
Sounds shady.
the whole nine yards. It's like something out of a movie.
It's like, okay, is this just messy bookkeeping or is there something more,
Right.
more intentional?
Well, let's start with our main character, Michael Curran,
Okay, the salmon guy.
the salmon guy, right? He was in the seafood business, but he was playing fast and loose with company names, let's just say.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, he would use names like Boston International Seafood Exchange, Inc.
Okay.
And that Inc., that's going to come back to haunt him
I
later.
was going to say, that seems important.
It is, because he was trying to make it seem like it was this big, legitimate corporation.
Oh, I see. The classic fake ink.
Exactly. And he even had checks printed with this made-up name.
Wow, he went all out.
Yeah, he signed them as treasurer with a flourish, had business cards, the whole shebang.
Okay, so he was putting on a show, but was there even a real company behind all of this?
That's where things get interesting.
Okay.
So, Curran had actually incorporated a company called Marketing Designs, Inc. back in 1977.
Okay.
But here's the catch.
Oh, boy.
It dissolved in 1983.
Oh, okay.
And all of those salmon debts, they piled up after Marketing Designs had already gone kaput.
So he was basically running around acting like he represented a company that didn't even exist.
That's essentially what was happening.
And the Norwegian exporters, they were just left in the dark.
Yep.
I mean, shouldn't they have done some due diligence, like a quick Google search, maybe?
You would think so, wouldn't go. But the court was very clear on this. The responsibility to disclose, and I mean like shout it from the rooftops,
Yeah.
lies with the agent, not the other party.
Oh,
Like,
interesting.
imagine you're hiring a contractor for some big project, right? And they say, oh, I work for this large, reputable firm, but they won't tell you the name.
Yeah, that's shady.
Exactly. You'd be a little hesitant to sign that contract, right?
Oh,
You want to
absolutely.
know who you're really getting involved
Oh,
with.
yeah, who's actually going to be doing the work?
Right. So in this case, it was Curran's responsibility to be upfront about who he was representing, not the exporter's job to become, private investigators.
Okay, that makes sense.
And this brings us to the heart of agency law and these different types of principles.
Okay, bring it down for me.
All right, so first we've got the straightforward one, the disclosed principle.
Me appeasing.
Everyone knows who's calling the shots, everything's out in the open.
Transparency, I like it.
Then you've got the undisclosed principle,
Ooh, cloak and dagger.
totally shrouded in secrecy.
Okay, so we've got full transparency, and we've got secret squirrel.
Right.
What's the third one? The one that tripped up our salmon friend.
This is the tricky one. It's called a partially disclosed principle.
Uh-oh.
This is where things get slippery.
Sounds dangerous.
The other party knows they're dealing with an agent,
A
right?
middleman.
But they don't know who that agent is representing.
So, like, they know someone's pulling the strings, they just don't know who the puppet master is.
Exactly. And that's exactly where Curran messed up.
Oh, boy.
The court decided that his actions put him squarely in this partially disclosed principal territory.
Uh-oh.
And because he failed to reveal who he was really working for, he was personally liable for all those salmon debts.
Wow, so that's like a $250,000 mistake.
It is. And to really drive the point home, the court actually quoted a legal precedent here.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they said the duty rests upon the agent to disclose his agency and not upon others to discover it.
Oh, wow, that's pretty clear cut.
It is. It basically dismantles Curran's whole, they could have just Googled me
Yeah,
defense.
do your own research, buddy.
Exactly. So Curran tried to argue that, the exporters had the means to figure out about Marketing Designs, Inc., public records, and all that.
Yeah.
But the court basically said nope, and they drew this crucial distinction between actual knowledge and simply having the means of knowledge.
Hold on. So there's a difference between actually knowing something and just having the potential to find it out?
There is, and it's important.
Yeah.
Like, let's say you're drafting a contract for your client, right?
Yeah.
Would you tell them, hey, just do a quick Google search on the other party and hope for the best?
No way.
Or would you insist on full, explicit disclosure, everything in writing?
Give me that paper trail.
Exactly. You need that documented proof.
So Curran's, they should have just looked it up argument, that didn't fly?
Not at all.
And there's another layer to this, right? Didn't he keep adding ink to all these fake company names?
Oh, yeah, the Boston International Seafood Exchange, Inc.
I have to admit, I kind of thought that was a small detail. What's the big deal about adding ink?
Well, in Massachusetts, it's a huge deal.
Really?
Using ink for a company that doesn't actually exist. That's not just a civil issue. That's a criminal offense.
Oh, wow. Okay, so not only was he not being transparent, but he was potentially breaking the law.
Exactly. It's like wearing a police uniform when you're not a cop.
You're misrepresenting yourself, yeah.
Right. And to make matters even more interesting, Curran tried to pull this really audacious move after the lawsuit was filed.
What did he do?
Remember how Marketing Designs, Inc. had dissolved way back when?
Yeah, like 1983.
Well, 30 days after the lawsuit hit his desk, Curran filed paperwork to revive Marketing Designs, Inc.
Whoa, he's trying to rewrite history?
It's like he was trying to make it seem like the company had been alive and well this whole time.
That's wild. Did it work?
Not a chance. The court saw right through it.
Okay.
They recognized it for what it was, a desperate attempt to dodge responsibility.
So even with his last-minute corporate resurrection, Curran was still on the hook for that mountain of salmon.
100%.
This is wild. So what's the big takeaway for everyone listening?
The golden rule of agency law, silence is golden for the plaintiff.
Oh, I like that.
As an agent, you have to be upfront and honest about who you're representing.
Yeah.
You need to disclose both your role and the identity of your principal, no exception.
So be transparent, be clear, or be prepared to pay the price.
Exactly. And here's a practical tip for all the lawyers out there.
Yeah, hit us with it.
Always, always advise your clients to put these disclosures in writing.
Get it on paper.
Contract, email, anything that creates a clear paper trail.
That paper trail is key.
And don't forget to verify the corporate status of everyone involved before signing on the dotted line.
Do your homework, folks.
A little due diligence can save you a lot of headaches down the road.
True words have never been spoken. This whole case has been a real eye-opener.
It really is.
Like, even those small details can have some major legal consequences.
Absolutely. The law is kind of like a spider web.
Okay.
Seems harmless at first, but you get caught in the wrong place and you could be stuck in a really sticky situation.
All right, before we move on, I have one more question that's been bugging me. Like, what if the principal is already defunct?
Okay.
Like Marketing Designs was, could an agent get out of liability by reviving the corporation after a debt is incurred?
Ooh, that's a good question. And honestly, it's a bit of a legal gray area.
Oh, okay.
The court didn't specifically address that in this case.
So a little legal cliffhanger.
Exactly. But we do know that timing is everything.
Yeah.
Trying to backtrack and change the story after the fact, that's not going to fly in court.
Yeah, courts see right through that.
They do.
All right, folks, that wraps up part one of our deep dive into Atlantic Salmon as v. Curran.
Welcome back. You know, it's amazing how this case, this whole salmon situation, it really like opens up this whole can of worms when it comes to individual actions, right? And how they play into these bigger corporate structures.
Yeah, like we've stumbled into this legal mystery novel almost with all these twists and turns.
Totally.
And these characters trying to play this corporate game of hide and seek.
Right, right.
So we talked about agent liability, those partially disclosed principles, and how important transparency is.
Yeah.
But now we're diving into another legal thriller, piercing the corporate veil.
Ooh, now that's something that makes even the most seasoned corporate players sweat a little bit.
So you're telling me that even though a corporation is supposed to be its own thing, right, separate from the people running it,
right,
those people can still be held personally responsible?
Sometimes, yeah.
That's intense.
It is. It's basically the court saying, nice try, but we see right through your corporate facade.
Okay, so they're lifting the curtain.
Exactly. Piercing the corporate veil, it lets the court hold individuals liable for the debts and obligations of a corporation, even though those corporations are usually treated as separate legal entities.
So it's like a rare but powerful legal weapon.
Exactly. It's not an everyday thing, but when it happens, you know it's serious.
So what makes a court decide to pierce that veil? What are they looking for?
There are a few red flags, things that make the court suspicious.
Okay.
One of the big ones is this disregard for corporate formalities.
Okay, so like what? Skipping board meetings, messy records.
That kind of thing, yeah, like mixing personal funds with company money.
So you can't just treat the company like your personal piggy bank.
Nope. The courts want to see that you're treating the corporation like a separate entity, not just an extension of yourself.
Got it. Respect the corporate boundaries.
Exactly. And another big red flag is any hint of fraud, you know, shady dealings or trying to avoid legal obligations.
So if it looks like the corporation is being used as a shield,
The court's going to take a closer look, for sure.
It sounds like piercing the corporate veil is all about fairness, making sure the system works.
Absolutely. It's about making sure that people can't hide behind a corporation to escape accountability.
Okay, so how does this all connect back to our salmon saga with Michael Curran?
Well, the court didn't explicitly say they were piercing the corporate veil in this case.
Okay.
But they were definitely thinking along those lines.
I see. So the concept was there.
Right. Remember how Curran was playing with those made-up company names?
Yeah, and blurring the lines between his personal stuff and those fake corporations.
Exactly. It's like a shell game trying to confuse everyone about what was real.
And then that last-minute attempt to revive Marketing Designs, Inc., after the lawsuit, that was suspicious, too.
Very suspicious. It looked like he was trying to create a shield after the fact.
So even though they didn't use the exact term, the court was essentially doing something similar by holding him personally liable.
Precisely. They saw through the charade and recognized that he was the one behind it all.
So the lesson here is that corporate transparency is key.
Absolutely.
And playing fast and loose with the rules can have some serious consequences.
No doubt about it. This whole case is a reminder that the law can hold individuals accountable even when they're operating through corporations.
So for our listeners out there, what's the best way to avoid ending up in a situation like Michael Curran's?
First and foremost, treat your corporation with respect.
Okay.
Maintain those corporate formalities, you know, hold the meetings, keep accurate records, and separate your personal finances from the business.
No more dipping into the company account for vacations.
Probably not a good idea.
All right. Good to know.
And just as important, honesty and transparency.
Right. Being upfront in all your dealings.
Exactly. Disclose your role, the identity of your principal, avoid those tempting fictitious names.
And of course, when in doubt, lawyer up.
Always a good idea. Make sure you're on the right side of the law.
So honesty and transparency are not just ethical principles, but also smart legal strategies.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Corporations might be designed to limit liability,
yeah,
but they're not a free pass to act unethically.
The law always catches up.
It does, eventually.
This has been a fascinating look into agency law and corporate liability.
It has.
But the adventure's not over yet.
Not quite. In our final act, we'll examine the legal precedents that influenced the court's decision.
Oh, interesting.
And we'll see how those principles continue to shape the legal landscape today.
All right, so we're back for the final act of our Atlantic Salmon Asvi Curran deep dive.
It has been quite the journey, hasn't it?
It really has. Like, this whole thing started with a simple salmon deal, right? And now we're in the middle of this legal thriller with shell companies and phantom principals.
Right. It just shows you how even these, like, everyday business transactions can get tangled up in these, you know, complex legal principles.
Absolutely. But before we wrap this up, I think we should take a look at the legal precedents that led to the court's decision.
Yeah, definitely. Like, looking at these past cases, it gives us context, you know?
Yeah.
It shows us how these principles of agency law have, like, evolved over time.
Okay, so we're going full legal historian on this one.
A little bit. Think of it like examining the legal DNA of the case, you know?
I like it. So what kind of precedents are we talking about? Are we dusting off the old law books?
Well, not that old, but one of the key precedents here is the restatement of agency.
Okay, now for those of us who haven't spent countless hours in the library, what exactly is a restatement?
So the restatements, they're basically these authoritative compilations of legal principles, right? They're like guides that judges and lawyers use to navigate the law.
Okay, so like a legal GPS system, making sure everyone's on the right track.
Exactly. They lay out a clear roadmap.
I like it.
And in this case, the court cited the restatement second to back up their decision that, you know, an agent acting for a partially disclosed principal, they're personally liable for the contracts they make.
Right, because the other party doesn't know who they're really dealing with, so the agent is kind of putting themselves on the line.
Exactly. If things go wrong, they're the ones holding the bed.
Makes sense. So what other cases did the court look at?
Well, they also pulled from several Massachusetts cases that dealt with similar issues of agent liability.
Okay.
Cases that kind of set the stage for the Curran decision.
Interesting.
One that really stands out is Norfolk County Trust Covey Green. This case goes all the way back to 1930.
Wow, 1930. That's almost 100 years ago.
It is. And it shows you how these legal principles can really stick around, you know?
Yeah, they stand the test of time.
They do. It speaks to the whole idea of common law, where legal principles are built up and refined through all these different court decisions.
Like a legal evolution.
Exactly. So in Norfolk County Trust, the court basically said that if an agent signs a contract in their own name without revealing their principal, they're personally liable.
Okay, so that connects directly back to Curran, right? Because he was signing checks and doing business in the name of those fake companies.
It's a perfect fit.
Wow. So even though the specifics of the cases are different, the core legal principle is the same.
That's the key takeaway here. And that's why understanding legal precedents is so important. They show us how the law has been applied in all these different situations.
Yeah, it's like having a roadmap for how courts might rule in the future.
Exactly. A legal compass.
So what other landmark cases influenced the current decision?
Another big one is Browning v. Haskell, a 1916 case that really emphasized the importance of disclosure. The court in that case said that an agent has to clearly disclose both their role and who they're representing, their principal, to avoid being held personally liable.
So you can't just say, hey, I'm an agent, but I'm sworn to secrecy about who I work for. That's not going to cut it.
Nope. You got to name names, full transparency.
Got it. So all these cases together, they basically create this clear expectation in Massachusetts law that you got to be upfront in agency relationships.
Absolutely. Anything less is a gamble.
And Curran learned that the hard way.
He did, a $250,000 lesson.
This whole deep dive has been a real eye-opener. It makes you realize how important those details are in contracts.
Absolutely. And you really got to make sure you understand who you're dealing with.
Yeah, no matter how straightforward things might seem.
Right. It's a good lesson for everyone, not just lawyers.
For sure. Knowing about agency law can really help protect your interests.
Absolutely.
Well, I think we've covered the Atlantic Salmon ASV Curran case pretty thoroughly. Any last words of wisdom before we wrap up?
Just a reminder to everyone out there, always proceed with caution in business.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to ask questions. Get everything in writing. And if you're not sure about something, talk to a lawyer.
Solid advice. And always remember, if it seems too good to be true, it probably is.
Words to live by.
Well, thanks for joining us on this legal adventure. We hope you enjoyed it. And until next time, stay informed, stay curious, and stay on the right side of the law.